All right. How many years has Urban Astronomer been a thing?
It was launched end of 2009, very late International Year of Astronomy project. Started the website, started creating, and it's had its ups and downs ever since. So that's what, 8 years, I think, coming on 8 years now.
And it started as a website. What's on this website? I mean, I know this, I'm just asking.
Well, I think in the beginning I was just trying to be Universe Today, you know. This is a site full of information and news about space and astronomy, answering questions that people might have. You know, because everyone loves to be the expert, right? If you've got the thing that you know all about, and it's nice to be the guy that everyone comes to ask questions, and the website was kind of just that. You know, it was putting myself on the internet through a website, as it were.
And what sorts of questions did people ask? I mean, what are your favorites, some of your favorites over the years?
Oh, it was distressing. A few actual questions came in. They were all up on the website. I don't know, what's some good ones? Good question. I can't think of any right now.
Well, I remember the one, the head exploding one. I just don't remember the question.
Yeah, I think that was the first really popular page on the whole website. Was somebody wanted to know, you know, in science fiction movies, and it's just, I suppose it's common knowledge that when you are out in space without a spacesuit, you explode. Except if you look at other movies, you don't explode, you freeze solid with little ice crystals visibly patterning across your skin, and then you...
And then you shatter.
Yeah,
like,
you get the stricken expression on your face as you drift off into, you know. and so I went and looked it up. I did my homework. I found some articles specifically addressing this question by, I think it was a... Well, I can't remember if it was a doctor or a physicist or whatever, but working for NASA. And they were able to quote, as a result, I was able to quote people that this had actually happened to, what their experience was and what their long-term effects were. So that was interesting.
That's amazing. How many articles are there on the, I mean, I'm assuming it's not just questions, it's also, you know.
Sure, I don't know. I've got no idea anymore. At one stage, it was about 1,000 plus. But that was many years ago, and I did a major site migration, and as a part of that, I trimmed a lot of the garbage articles. You know, there were articles that were just blog posts, you know. Hi, sorry, there haven't been any updates this week. but keep tuning in, you know, stuff like that. That's not worth keeping in your archive. That's not an article for the ages.
They are, I must say, from the ones that are some of my favorites on the website, are the sort of evergreen questions about the moon and the planets and, you know, just various, you know, what is a black hole and what is a nebula and that sort of thing. But you've also got, the history of famous astronomers.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit of an embarrassment, actually. That was this big, ambitious project that I came up with. I was going to write these long, detailed bios on these guys, and I think I got two down. I think it was Aristarchus. He's the chap who first measured the diameter of the Earth, around about 2600 BC. People don't realize he was an African astronomer. You know, he was from Libya.
Huh.
He has a Greek name, and all the statues show with classically sort of in a classic Greek statue style because it was part of the Greek Empire at the time.
Yeah.
But his ancestry, I mean, it was definitely African. He moved to Egypt. He was the librarian at the famous Library of Alexandria, and he was able to do simple experiments. I mean, stuff that you could do yourself at home with just measuring shadows. He was able to calculate the diameter of the Earth, and got it, I think it was within just a few percent of the actual figure. And the uncertainty comes more because we don't really understand the units he was using. He said it was so many stadia around.
Uh-huh.
And
so many Normans.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah.
Whatever they were using, yes.
I mean, the stadia was the length of a like a sports field, an athletics ground. But it wasn't standardized, so it was somewhere between 100 and 120 meters, or maybe 80 to somewhere in that area. So we're not actually sure exactly how long it was, but within that range of uncertainty, it was still enormously accurate, considering that he didn't have access to, you know, space satellites or...
Yeah, he had a stick and a string.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
And a calendar.
And the other one?
I believe that was Copernicus, who is, gets a lot of credit for being the first guy to accept and popularize the idea that the Earth orbits the Sun and not the other way around.
I'm sure you did another guy, a more recent astronomer.
I did one or two on living astronomers in South Africa.
No. I'm thinking of he.
Not Newton.
No. I think it starts with an H. Sorry, I don't remember his name. But he.
Harold.
Hinkle. Herkel.
Herschel.
Herschel. There we go.
I don't think I did write that. I've talked a lot about him.
I remember the story quite well. He came to Cape Town, and then his wife joined him at some point, and I think he may have lost a wife and some children at some other point.
Well, there were three Herschels. There was Herschel Sr. I've forgotten his name now. William Herschel. He was actually German. And then his son, and this is embarrassing. We're going to have to... I want to skip this section because I am so uninformed here. I don't know who Caroline Herschel was.
Oh, if it was his daughter or his wife or...
Well, not his wife, but I think she was a sister or maybe a half-sister.
Don't cut it out. It's interesting.
All right, well... and then there was Caroline Herschel, who was the third of the family, who worked with John.
Oh, calculating and... Didn't she become like a comet spotter in her own right?
Yeah, she observed directly. And although a lot of her work was done sort of in the guise of assisting John, she made a huge number of discoveries on her own right. and she's kind of forgotten these days. Although, okay, in the last few years, there's been a great resurgence. People trying to, you know, recognize, identify women in astronomy and in science.
Retroactively.
In general. Yeah. Because these days it feels like such a modern thing. Well, no, it is such a modern thing for women to be allowed to do these things, to be accepted. But they were still out there doing it. You know, often they tended to just not get any credit for it.
That's one thing I have realized when people talk about women in STEM, or, you know, in the sciences in general. Mm. I get the impression astronomy was a little more open to this sort of thing. You mentioned a well-known astronomer who employed... this group of women to do all his calculations for him.
Pickering.
Yes, that guy.
If I remember right, he was at the Harvard Observatory, and this was 19th century. He'd gotten frustrated with all his with his students, because, you know, typically science is built on the back of students, right?
Of course.
You have the prof who has the great ideas, and then the students who
actually
do all the work. Yeah. and he was very unimpressed with these young, rich, intelligent lads who were coming along and spending all their time doing whatever it is that students did in the 19th century. I'm sure it wasn't getting drunk and hitting on girls.
I'd almost bet it was, but anyway.
So he threw a bit of a strop and announced that his cleaning lady could do a better job than these lazy, useless oafs. And then to prove his point, he did exactly that. He brought his maid in. I think she was his maid. And he taught her how to do the basic work, because starting off, at least, it wasn't particularly difficult to work. It was just time consuming and tedious and laborious, and it was something that could be taught easily, although it still required a bit of brain power and sharp eyes. It was basically looking at the photographs that they had taken of the stars and...
Oh, yes, and identifying or counting them?
Yes, identifying them, just measuring how bright they were, and so building up a catalogue. So he was so impressed with her work that he started employing other women, and eventually he had this large team of women who worked for him at the observatory. They were rather unkindly referred to as Pickering's harem. there's a very famous photograph of just all these women in these Victorian outfits standing on the steps of the observatory with Mr. Pickering looking all stern in the way of portraits of the time, you know, in the middle of them.
That's amazing.
And yeah, it depends. You know, there's mixed views about this. I mean, on the one hand, he's seen as being this great empowering force, demonstrating that women could easily do this work and there's no reason why they couldn't. While at the same time, he was paying them significantly less than he would have been able to pay even a boy.
Yeah.
And yeah, I suppose it's...
Yeah, your person's got to view it from... through the passage of time, from the perspective of...
I think to have the kind of debates we have today at that era would be impossible. No one on earth, I think, would have sort of reasonably entertained the idea of paying the women the same as the men because, well, you know, obviously, right? And now, 100 years later, we look back at this and we throw our hands in the air and say, this is appalling.
Some of us do. Others deny that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But, okay, moving on. Mm. At some point, just operating the website and writing it morphed into actual speaking engagements. When did that start happening?
The first speaking I did was at... I volunteered myself for the 2010, I think it was, symposium of the Astronomical Society of South Africa, which happened to be not so close from where I lived that year.
Oh, I think I remember you spoke about
The website.
You used it as a sort of a to talk about astronomy online and astronomy education, was it, or something like that?
I mean, I was using the website itself as a sort of case study for how this can be done. And of course, I had the secret, hidden, very subtle, agenda of getting people to go to the website and start loving it. And I think after that, then I started getting emails from local conservancies. I think it was the Modderfontein Conservancy in Johannesburg. They asked me to just come and talk about space and stars and things.
I think Mensa also,
That came later. The local conservancy in the area that we live, they asked me a few times to speak on light pollution.
Oh, yes, the Crocodile River.
Yeah, the Mensa talk, I spoke about astrophotography because the local chapter of Mensa have a, I think every two weeks, I think, they bring in experts on whatever interesting subjects. So one week it might be a whiskey tasting guy will come along and talk about whiskey for 45 minutes. And then one time it was me and so on and so on, which was fun.
Yeah. Now you mentioned astrophotography. At some point, the Urban Astronomer website got this new component, which was where you started talking about grinding your own mirror. Mm-hmm. And then later, astrophotography in particular. At what point, and I know at some point you became the actual head of astrophotography at the South Africa,
at ASA. Yeah.
How did that evolve?
Okay, well, the telescope making was a separate side issue. I flew down to Cape Town for the 2010 symposium, where they had a workshop on astrophotography the day before.
You happened to catch that?
Yeah, yes. Well, I
scheduled it. Oh, you specifically wanted to? Okay.
And I mean, I didn't even own a camera at the we had a little Canon point and shoot camera. So I thought, well, this will be interesting. And I went and I became very excited about it. I started playing with image processing software and shortly afterwards bought a very cheap DSLR. And I was posting my photographs online. And very shortly afterwards, I got a phone call from one of the council members of ASA who said to me that they had a vacancy directing the imaging section of ASA, and I seemed to be an enthusiastic young man, and would I be interested? I said, okay, what's involved? And they said, well, I don't know, you just make sure that...
Do whatever it is you do.
Yeah. And ever since, I've been in that role, yeah.
And you've been, I know you've been quite involved with Scopex every year, running the actual astrophotography stand. How does that work? What happens there? Do people submit photos and you judge them, or
yeah,
the photos, not the people?
Well, I judge the people. No, I've sort of landed into that role as well. They have their astrophotography competition every year. The idea is you enter on the day, you bring prints. You bring prints of your photos with all the information written on it. Just no names. If you get there early enough, you enter it, it gets put up on the board, and then the judges decide the judges use their own discretion to decide on the day what photographs are.
Sorry.
Is she gone?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, well, you bring your photos in. They've got to be appropriately labeled, you know, with technical information and identifying what the photograph is of. And then the judges have a look and they award the prizes. And some years it's just been me. I prefer it when I'm able to get someone to assist. Sometimes we bring up people from Cape Town, senior members of ASA at the times. In fact, this year we've managed to get a professional photographer to assist who was a great call because he doesn't like entering competitions.
So he won't be
exactly
putting
there's no
himself
conflict
out.
There, yeah.
Okay. What's the most, like, in your years now as basically a professional amateur astronomer? I suppose a person could. I don't know how else to put it. What is the sort of weirdest question you've ever been asked? Okay, apart from the head exploding, I saw one. It had something to do with lightning, and I've noticed people sometimes ask you sort of weather phenomena sorts of questions.
Yeah, I've had a few phone calls from the press. At some point, my name got onto the phone book at the newspaper in the town where I grew up, and so about once a year, I get this phone call, and they've asked me a few weather questions. They'll ask about rainbows, or they'll ask about interesting cloud formations.
Astrid's going to put some jam on toast for you. Sweetie, you're going to get your chance. You're going to make this quick. What was the question asked?
Weird questions.
Oh, weather phenomenon. Let me see what I can do. Come, let's get you something. What do you want?
Yeah. No, the kids have suddenly decided to start screaming and ruining the recording.
What was the question?
Oh, there were various ones.
You mean grown up ones? Were they boring?
No. Okay, you need to sit still and you can't move your chair because it'll make a scraping noise, okay?
Inside. Bridge, now.
Oh,
I just sacrificed my whole candorel. Come, inside. Inside. We're almost done. Weather phenomenon.
Yeah, so... Yeah, for some reason, people seem to think that astronomers are the people to go to for weather questions instead of meteorologists. And we know that meteorologists exist. We see them, you know, the weather guy on the news, you know.
You know what's interesting, though, is through, you know, over the years, you've obviously made yourself very accessible to people.
Mm.
And maybe that's the major issue in the fact that, you know, where do you find your local friendly neighborhood meteorologist? You know, I mean, you know they exist.
Well, I know that in South Africa, at least, you've got your South African Weather Service, which are basically a government department.
Entity,
part of the, I suppose they're part of the, what do you call them? The man, that body that runs all research.
Oh, the Illuminati.
No, man. Yeah.
I'm teasing.
They fall under the Minister of Science and Technology.
Yeah, it'll be Science and Technology, I think.
And then it's the... In something.
People. Yes, I know who you're talking about. I know who you're talking about, yes. Yeah. It's not on the tip of my tongue.
Anyway.
But you obviously have a passion for science, then, if you're able to answer these questions.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you generally know quite a lot about rainbows and lightning and natural phenomena.
The thing is, I just paid attention, you know, in high school, in science class. I don't have any huge deep knowledge, but it seems, I suppose with most people, it's once exams are passed, they forget about it. They don't care. And it was always, at least, I mean, they did their best to make it boring, but, you know.
They couldn't fool you.
Yeah.
But there's a few other misconceptions, I think, that people have. And one I had for a long time was that astronauts still go to the moon. And I think this is probably one of the most commonly held misconceptions.
Sorry, this... Squeak! Squeak! Yeah. Victor!
Victor, stop it! Stop swinging on the gate, okay?
What did he say?
He said fine. I think one of the most commonly held misconceptions is the idea that that astronauts are still going to the moon. And I think a lot of people believe this. And you once mentioned to me how many actual missions there were, but I don't, if I understand it correctly, after Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and the other guy, whose
Michael
name
Collins,
people always forget, was there a moon landing after that at all?
Well, there was Apollo 12 with and the other guy. There was Apollo 13, which famously never made it to the moon.
Yes, yes.
Then Apollos 14, 15, 16, and 17.
And did they make it to the moon?
They all made it to the moon. The last ones even brought a car with a little moon buggy.
And left it there.
Yeah. No, you leave as much as possible behind because you can't afford the weight.
Exactly, because of the fuel. Mm. But and what year was that, the last mission?
1972, I think.
So for like 3 years.
Yeah, for 3 years we were putting people on other worlds.
And then we just stopped.
And then we stopped, yeah.
The International Space Station, sorry, this is not, I'm just asking out of interest now that I've, you know, curiosity. It's obviously huge, and it's obviously been built by several countries over many years.
Yeah.
What do they do up there? I mean, I know every now and then, you know, astronomers go up there and then they live there for a while and they come back down.
Research mainly. Well, entirely. Some of the research is on the astronauts themselves, trying to figure out
what happens to their bodies and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and why. Some of it, a lot of it is commercial. There'll be certain, for example, like chemistry or biology experiments, for example. They want to know how stuff behaves in zero gravity. Or there might be stuff that can only be done in zero gravity.
Ah, and they actually do this.
Yeah, and a... So private companies developing a new product, for example, will need to have these experiments performed, and they will then pay a very large sum of money to have their equipment sent up on the next rocket.
And tested there.
Yeah, and the astronauts run the experiments, and it's all under strict confidentiality because there's money involved. You know, if your competitors find out,
of course,
then they can beat you to the market and whatever else.
I know you just know about this sort of generally, but I'm assuming this is how they fund it, the whole thing, or is it government-funded?
It's mainly government-funded. The running costs are enormous. So it comes out of the science budgets of some huge number of countries. I believe the USA covers the bulk of it. through NASA, but the ESA are the our major partner.
Are they the European Space Agency?
Yes, European Space Agency. Russia are major partners. I know Japan is involved.
I think we've got to close this off.
Where's no? You can. Where are my poles? Victor, can you get some sugar for Ursh? Ursh, come down. Victor's gonna give you sugar. Okay. Victor, you can give Ursh no sugar. Okay. Calm down, Victor. I'm totally desperate at this point.
So the primary partners are the USA, the European Union, the European Space Agency, Russia, and then a whole bunch of other countries as well. And they get the privilege of having their astronauts go up there.
And yeah, and I mean, I'm assuming the general information and the general experiments and research that they do obviously is free.
Yeah, I mean, if it's state-funded science, then by definition it's free because taxpayers paid for it, taxpayers own it.
Yeah.
It's only the private stuff that's would be kept confidential, and it tends to be corporate interests.
Okay. And then now sort of moving on in your timeline, mm-hmm. At what point did the podcast start coming together in your head generally?
Wow, that's a long time. A year and a half, 2 years maybe.
And can you tell me more about the journey? I mean, I know it hasn't been going for a year or two.
No,
it took
no.
a while to get going.
I mean, I had the idea that it was something I wanted to do, and I started doing my homework to find out how can I host this thing. I learned how to run, what software to load onto the website itself to make it all work. And then I kind of stalled because I didn't know what I was actually going to say. And I didn't have decent equipment. Eventually kind of got running when we began the Now Look Here podcast.
Yes.
That was you and me. I bought a set of USB headsets, microphones and headphones. And we put out, I believe it was about 10 or 11 episodes, I think. And learned a lot about the editing process, but just how to turn a recording into an actual show that someone can download, plus how to actually make the recordings in the first place, you know, how to know what to say, how not to say all the time.
Exactly.
Although I notice I'm still doing it. and then that sort of slowed down a bit. We were having trouble scheduling and finding time to both sit together and record. And yeah, it was must have been around about this time last year, July, maybe August last year. We there was a call, International Astronomical Union's. What are they called now? They are in the Office of Astronomy Development. Put out a call for funding.
To fund, I suppose. For
yeah, well,
submissions.
Well, a call for funding means that you can approach them for funding.
Ah, okay.
They had some money to spend and. And I made a proposal, and I got through to the second round, I believe, if I recall the exact timeline. But in the end, I wasn't awarded funding, which was a bit of a blow because I had intended to use that to buy some proper recording equipment, decent microphones, because the headsets turned out to be
not very good.
Yeah, they were very expensive and they were garbage. They fell apart. I've still got the pieces, you know? and that's equipment that I looked after. So. Yeah, so I was planning to get decent equipment, to buy a dedicated computer, to do the processing, pay for a transcription service and all that. And at the end of the day, I didn't get the funding.
But you decided to go ahead own.
I was lucky to get a bit of a windfall. I was lucky enough to get a bit of a bonus at my day job. And with that money, I just went and bought the equipment myself. Revised the plans. Astrid, get down! Tell me in 5 minutes.
5 more minutes, okay? Just wait. Okay. Mother. 5 minutes, okay?
You don't interrupt us when we're working. Where was I? What was I saying?
you had a windfall.
Yeah, so I revised the plan, scrapped the transcripts and all that, and just bought the recording gear and the microphones, and then I launched it. And first episode, I'm going to kill this kid.
Just carry on, carry on.
And first episode went out, I believe, end of February-ish. And yeah, we've been going ever since.
That's pretty incredible if you consider where you started from. What was your original goal compared to your goal now? I mean, you've mentioned your original goal, which was basically just astronomy outreach.
You mean goal with the website? Or?
Goal with the podcast, now that it's evolved. It's obviously not a, you know, it started as a website. It's now...
Well, the goal hasn't really changed much. I mean, I brought on a kind of a socially aware thing, sort of to try and get the funding, but I stuck with it. You know, the idea is... The goal is to promote astronomy and science as things that you can do, you know, as hobbies, as fields of study, as careers. And I think, you know, in this country at least, people are unaware of how important we are.
Geographically.
Yeah, well, just globally. I mean, we've got these great observatories. We've got these massive telescopes. We're in a geographically fantastic location. We are uniquely positioned to see parts of the sky that nobody else can. So, for example, a while ago, in fact, very recently, there was supposed to be an occultation of a tiny asteroid, not asteroid, a minor planet, which is expected to be the next destination for the New Horizons probe. You know that one about that last year went past Pluto?
Yes, yes.
All those beautiful pictures of the and Pluto suddenly turns out to be pinkish with a heart on it.
And yes, and unicorns.
Right. So this other world that they found, they knew nothing about it.
What more can I do?
Okay. So this other world, they know nothing about it, and they need to start studying it so they know what to expect when
just keep going.
When New Horizons gets there. Sorry, I'd love to keep going, but I have no idea what the hell I'm saying. There's no point, Kath.
No, we're
it's
doing
wait until
well.
She stopped. What's the point? I can't edit this out. This is too much. Of course you got it. You always got to tell. Okay. What do you want to tell us, girl? Sure. But I'd love to finish, but you guys won't let me. You keep kicking doors and making noise.
No, come inside. You're going to get your chance, but Mommy and Daddy are almost finished. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Give your sister one. There we go. Okay. Where are Mommy's pills? Where's Mommy's sweets? Where are my sweet pills? What have you done with them? You're going to look after them. Astrid, can you go fetch an apple for Ursh? Don't stop crying. Don't do that. Where are Mommy's pills? Where are Mommy's pills? Where did you put them? Go fetch them.
I can see her on here. So there's no point in trying to talk over that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we stop now and we finish tonight.
Yeah, we can